You're listening to Chad Hartman, weekdays noon to 3 on News Radio 830 WCCO.
And now, Minnesota Hospital, the continuing saga of our dedicated medical men and women who helped make Minnesota one of the best states to get sick in. Today, Dr. Gil Whitney is in close consultation with Nurse Helen Trent at their new clinic in New Ulm, Minnesota. Oh, Helen. Helen.
Oh, Gil.
Great sound bites all day, honoring just a magnificent human being. Roger Erickson, as Laura just pointed out, passing away yesterday at the age of 89. No one in this building knew Roger better than this man, Dave Lee, who knew him, most importantly, as a friend and a colleague. Thank you so much for coming on, sir. I know you talked about this a lot this morning. You obviously knew Roger's health challenges and what he has been facing for quite a bit of time. Take me back to the first time that you're going to start here and you meet Roger and what that experience was like.
I started, gosh, Chad, 89, and I came up and I worked weekends. I got to do the ID breaks for Bill Deal and Paul Flatley and Reaction to the Action.
Sure.
After the Vikings.
Yeah, right.
And then I would fill in for Charlie and Raj whenever they needed, and it got to the point where I'd just sit with them. But I met Charlie the first day I was there, and, of course, Charlie always dressed to the nines, and you're a little intimidated, as you know, when you meet people like that, because radio was king, man.
Yes.
These were the guys.
Right.
And it was the atmosphere or the environment was so different. But then I waited because Raj was on one of his Good Neighbor trips, and he came back, and I thought I'd met a neighbor on the farm that I grew up with. That's the kind of persona he had, as you know. Everybody was his buddy, and he was always concerned about his listeners. And I always got a kick when he'd write these bits. I heard one of the lines today. I completely forgot about it when he was going back and forth with Gil and Helen, and Helen says, "You're my Superman." And he says, "No, I'm not. I'm just a guy that likes to wear a cape and tight pants." So, and his delivery and his drama background all into that. But anyway, so I met him, and about as common as they are, but I think, like you, you know, we had great respect for these guys, and you're intimidated to meet them, scared to even say anything in front of them, and he put you at ease, and he really was a wonderful human being. But I here's a great story, if you don't mind me sharing
sure.
it with you.
No, absolutely.
So Donna Shalala, and you and I have chatted about this, about Wisconsin, how she kind of turned things around there before as chancellor. So she goes off and becomes the Secretary of Health and Human Education in services.
Yep.
In D.C.
Yep.
And Minnesota's playing Wisconsin that year. And, of course, Wisconsin, or Roger was such a Minnesota fan a big homer. Well, Gophers, I don't even know if they'd won a game, maybe one. And this was back when it was the last game of the year down at Madison. I think Wisconsin was undefeated going to their first Rose Bowl. So anyway, we make a bet with Donna that the Gophers are going to beat Wisconsin. And of course, she took the bet, and she says, "Well, if I lose that bet, I will sing the Minnesota Rouser on the air with you."
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, "Well, we'll come out to D.C. We're so impressed with that. We'll come out to D.C. and do it live." Well, that's what happened. Minnesota won that one game that year. So we end up out in Washington, D.C. She sings the Rouser beautifully. And Roger and I do the show the next morning live from Paul Wellstone's office because he was the only guy not running for election.
Yeah, right. So he's there.
So he's there, and he was great and wonderful. We get done with the show, and we get a call from the White House. "Would you like to come over for a private tour?" And we thought they were putting us on until they asked for our Social Security numbers. So we gave them to them, and they said, "Well, come over in a half hour." And I said, "Well, we can be there in 10 minutes right next to you." They said, "No, a half hour." I said, "Well, we're right next." "One half hour."
Yeah.
So I said, "Okay, I get the picture."
Yeah.
So we get over there. We're waiting. A guy in security comes walking out. He looks at me. Looks at Roger, and he said, "Are you Roger?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "One more speeding ticket, and you got a problem, don't you?"
Oh, that's outstanding.
Okay, that was funny, because Roger came into work a little fast once in a while. But he was, you know, he's just a marvelous guy to be with. And part of that story is that Fritz Mondale knew we were going to be there, so he secretly set it up so we could get into the White House.
Oh, fantastic.
But that was very funny, and those guys were having a pretty good laugh at Roger's expense.
So let's talk pairings, right? I mean, relationships, friendships. But if you're going to work with somebody for 37 some years in the morning all the different challenges, all the different managers, all the different salespeople. You knew them better than I, but I was around them quite a bit. They were very different individuals, but Charlie and Roger worked so well together. Why was that?
I think for that exact reason you're talking about. So Charlie could bring things in like, you know, he's a connoisseur of food and certainly, as you know, the wine and
yes,
kind of the high life.
Yep.
And Roger was out in his garden getting dirt under his fingernails and, you know, driving an ATV and out there milking the cow. He did all those things.
Yes.
And so I think when they would meet, each one had a different adventure. They weren't doing the exact same thing, but they were from really different worlds. And boy, did they protect each other. Man, I tell you what, they were in a good way. But they watched out for each other as well. And then, of course, the neat thing about that, Chad, as you know, is you work 3-4 hours a day, and then you go your own way. So it isn't like they hung out a lot mm-hmm. together unless they were emceeing a banquet or something, which they did on occasion. But the other part of that, on that format, you know, Raj would do like 5 to 7 a.m.
I was just going to ask you that. I think a lot of people forget that they had their own, but then they had that shared time together.
Yep. So Booney would come in. If he came in at 6, he might hang out for the birthday segment or, you know, for a little bit. But then he really started at 7 during the news hour. Then Booney would stay there till 10. He had 9 to 10 to himself. So really, a little bit between 6 and 7, but always between 8 and 9, they were together all the time. But they were smart enough, so you never really got tired of each other during a 4-hour shift.
True.
And that was very smart. And then Raj would go in and write bits during the 7 o'clock hour. Unless he was taking a nap, that was always my favorite. He had a yoga mat in that office, you know, the office. Well, it's where you're at. You know where that is.
Yes.
On the floor there, he
right.
had that yoga mat. And then he'd put up a sign that said Z's. And don't bother me. I'm taking a 20-minute nap.
Okay, talk about Roger's ability as a writer, right? The two of you wrote so many things together. You saw that. You saw that skill. Was it something that came to him naturally? Did he work on it a lot? Would he work on it away from here? That part of him, because whether it was when you were part of it for so long or before that, their creativity wasn't just off the cuff because they both had that ability, but the extended amount of work they did before getting ready for many of these bits.
You're exactly right. He didn't wing it. He would, and you'd see him when he'd come out to the state fair now in his later stages, and he would always read the script, reread it again,
yes.
so he could almost ad-lib it once he looked at it. But he was really prepared, and I suppose it comes from that drama background that he had, that Charlie had. I think even Steve Cannon had that drama background at the University of Minnesota. I think Steve and Roger were actually in some of the same classes when they were students there for acting. So, yeah, he was well prepared.
That's a pretty good class, by the way.
Yeah,
I'd say that worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I wonder who that instructor
yeah,
was.
Yeah, exactly.
But these, so you're right. He would, nothing was off the, well, no, I shouldn't say nothing, but
yeah.
most of it in those bits. But man, he said, we had to do bits. We got to do bits. And then he'd write it. My favorite was the guy was just wonderful. He's awesome. But he would walk down the hallway and he'd ask people down the hallway that he knew, okay, listen to this. What do you think?
Yeah.
You know, it didn't matter if you were the janitor, if you were working up in traffic, by golly, if he trusted you, he was going to see if you liked those lines or not.
Well, I heard you with Tom Gavaris today. And When I interned here in the mid-80s for a couple of years, part of what I did was archiving when we still had all the reel-to-reels here.
Oh, wow.
And literally that small piece of paper you would just put in there, whether it was Twins highlights, Boone and Erickson highlights, Cannon highlights, and I thought you made a great point just there, and Tom echoed it, that Roger – truly, not just because I'm the star and here's somebody works here, so I feel like I have to do it. Roger, it seemed like from everything I observed a little bit as a kid and intern and then what you and others have said, Roger genuinely cared what other people thought of what was going on. And then also, Dave, genuinely cared what was going on with your life.
He did. You know, and I'll tell you a funny story, and the audience reciprocated. They trusted Roger. Roger could do, let's face it, he did some dirty jokes once in a while with great punchlines, and then he'd just stop. He didn't have to explain the joke. He'd move into something else, and you're going, wow, Raj did that. But Raj could do that. Raj could say almost anything. I'll give you a great example. So one day he does a one-liner on The biker from Mound, the one that Tour de France gave me.
Greg LeMond.
Greg LeMond.
Yeah.
So he does this one-liner, this joke on Greg LeMond. Funnier than heck. We're laughing. Don't think anything. A few days later, I get a letter in the mail from a group of women out in western Minnesota somewhere that were listening, and how dare I be so bold and obnoxious as to make fun of Greg LeMond. It was awful that you would do that, and I'll tell you one thing right now, Mr. Roger Erickson would never do something like that.
Right.
And it was Roger's joke. I showed him the letter, and he's just got a smirk on his face. He says, well, that's what happens after you've been here a while.
Yes. What can we share about Roger's life with his family away from here without crossing any lines? What part of Roger's life do you think Roger would want people to know? As example, what his life was like after he left here on a regular basis?
Well, he truly would go out into the pasture. He'd work with the livestock. He'd and of course, as you know, him and Maggie loved to travel.
Yes.
That was a passion of theirs. But he a lot of time with a good friend of ours. We both know Tracy quite well,
yep.
His daughter, who's right. Just a rock, just like her mother is.
Yep.
And then their son Steve, who was a nice athlete, unfortunately passed away
right.
a few
Way
years back.
Soon.
But yep. his family was the thing. Boy, he'd get off the air, and if he wasn't emceeing something, he was off and running with his family and in the garden and next to Wheelock Whitney's house out there in the western suburbs, chasing his horses and his cows and his pigs and everything else. So that's really what he was. He was a farm boy from Winthrop, Minnesota. He never really changed.
How do you think if Roger was in his prime right now? Because I've made this point before. I don't have any doubt people who are brilliant in different eras would adapt. How do you think Roger would work with how radio works now? Would he make that many changes? Would he stay in his lane? How would he adjust to how radio has evolved in the ways it has?
Well, he would adjust. He would, he was always on the pulse. And even, as you get a little older in the demo, Roger wanted to make darn sure that he didn't act older in the demo.
Yeah.
So he would stay in touch with things. I think he'd be just as good as he was.
Certainly, I do too.
The landscape has changed a little bit with social media and, morning TV's almost become really morning radio.
Yes.
But he would figure a way to be a little different, stay ahead. And that theater of the mind, Chad, that's what fascinated me. You'd have the Bernadotte International Airport, and you describe the jets landing and going out and the flight schedules. And, as you're driving, every one of us had different things we were picturing. The theater of the mind was the magic. And, of course, he grew up in that era when radio, you decided what things looked like and didn't look like.
Well, I mean, I think that's a really good point, Dave, because we both obviously have been a part of play-by-play for huge parts of our life. Roger had that ability within the bits to be so specific about what was going on that would bring people into it even more.
Yeah, he had the feel. He knew the pulse. And that was a really big deal to him, the listeners. I mean, there's no bravado there at all when he talked about the greatest listeners. That was a big deal to Raj. And I think it just goes hand in hand with what you said earlier. Everybody in the building is pretty much on even footing.
Yep.
And he kind of looked at that way with listeners too. So he just, I think right now he'd be doing great because he just had it figured out.
Dave, thanks so much. I know this is a tough day for you and all of us who knew Roger, but you knew him extraordinarily well, and I really appreciate you sharing the stories. I think it just adds to the context of what people have heard for years and years, and for the folks who are not as familiar with Roger, it just points out just the decency in this person who also is just great on air. So thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Chad. Yeah, I appreciate that, and I'm glad you and I both knew him. He was a real gem.
Absolutely. Dave Lee with really some kind and right on point thoughts on the passing and the life of Roger Erickson.